Always Holding to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Tim Miller, John Curcio, Jazz at Maja, Chris Fuchs, Atif Sheik, Justin Maitner, Gavante Chillis, Molly Ficarella, Thomas Navin, Nathan McKenzie, Joe Mickendo, Trayvon Brady, Steve Rogers, Eddie Bissell, Cameron Minard, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Becca Zeifel, Adam Parker, Tom Gerke, and Eric Eels. Thank you so much to all these patrons, and you too can become a patron by visiting patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.
I'm Michael Rosenbaum, Lex Luthor, and always hold on to Smallville.
Welcome to Always Holding to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and this week I'm joined by Mr. Jazz at Maja. What's up, Jazz?
I'm back. How's it going, Zach?
How's it going, man? You're from the land down under. So after much time zone coordination, we are podcasting together again, aren't we, Jazz?
Yeah, it took us a bit to get it all sorted out there. Like, Australia and US is a bit of a tricky one, but I'm glad we got there in the end.
It's like, it is 4:30 p.m. right now on Friday, Jazz. What time is it where you are? You know, that
yeah,
kind of
exactly.
Stuff. So there's a lot of that back and forth whenever we podcast. But it's great to have you on. And Jazz and I came into contact, if you might have recalled from podcast past, over our mutual love for the Houston Rockets. All right. And actually, that was a side effect of you finding the show, but that kind of like spurred on our conversations. And so this being a very sports-centric episode, I thought it'd be an appropriate one to have you on, Jazz.
Yeah, like when you told me we were doing this episode, at first I was thinking, this will be a good one. And then I watched it, and not so good, but like it did have that sport connection there. And I did have that Houston Rockets podcast for a bit there. Bit of a tumultuous season this year, but I'm still enjoying it. And really fitting episode, I guess.
Yeah, the Rockets, they started out slow this season, this being the 2018-2019 season, but they're clawing their way back up to the top, so I'm liking their chances, man.
Yeah, Harden getting back in the MVP chase with all these 40-point triple-double games. Can't argue with that. And we've got a lot of injuries, so swings and rounds, but roundabouts, I guess.
What did you think of the whole Carmelo Anthony thing?
I was definitely one of the people who was pretty optimistic about the signing, because, you know, we've always wanted a wing. A 3-and-D wing would have been good, but you thought you'd at least get the three part. But I don't know, man. He's getting up there, and he might be washed.
I saw a shirt at Academy, which is a U.S. sports goods store, and it was a Rockets jersey T-shirt with Carmelo Anthony. I came so close to buying it just for the like amusing irony of it, you know, yeah. To have a Carmelo Anthony shirt, right? So, but I didn't do it though. But you know, he's one of those guys that we always talked about getting. Like, I mean, for it's been at least 5 or 6 years, right? We're like, oh, we're gonna get Carmelo Anthony. We finally got him, and well, that turned out the way it did, and we move on. So,
yeah, it was the saddest thing the other day. I saw at work a guy was walking his kid, and he had a Carmelo Anthony Rockets jersey on, and it's like,
really?
Yeah, I was surprised that he was even like, for one, that he would have bought it, and for two, actually still had it. I was like, okay, that's an interesting one, but I guess it's a throwback at this point.
That's right. It's a curiosity at this point, right? So, but yeah, so that's the NBA. Let's talk about one of the other big sports, football. What is your familiarity with American football, Jazz?
Basically what I see on TV. Like, I'm not a huge watcher of American football, Australian football, yeah, but American football, I just can't get into the game, man. It's a little slow for me, I think. Obviously growing up with it over there, it's ingrained in your culture, but I just can't get into it no matter how many times I try. So like if it was as exciting as it is in the TV shows, then I'll be all over it, but I just can't get into it for some reason.
Have you ever watched Friday Night Lights?
No, I haven't, but I've heard that that's a really good show. So that's one
that is a good show. And it's not just about football, it's about life. So I recommend it. It's a book, it's a movie, and it's a TV show. I would recommend checking out the movie. I always, of course, recommend books to people, but, you know, your mileage may vary on books. I get it. But definitely check out the movie, and then the TV show is its own entity, and that's a great show, so I highly recommend that. So, and that's what I wish. I wish they would have infused some more Friday Night Lights into the Smallville football.
Was that not a CW show as well?
No, that was NBC, man. That was legit.
Oh, okay. So we don't have any crossover appeal between these two shows?
There was no crossover. No, the Smallville Crows did not play the Dillon Lions or the Dillon Panthers. It was the Dillon Panthers and the East Dillon Lions because they ended up starting a second high school. And it's very complicated. But I highly recommend Friday Night Lights. It's a great TV show. And if you want good football TV, watch that. Not Smallville. So
I've been ruined by all these Berlantiverse shows that I think every show is just connected at this point.
Yeah, no, there is no Friday Night Lights television universe. But yes, so obviously the football is a big part here. This is really the big football episode. I mean, I guess Devoted kind of was, but this one's even more so. I know that this episode has a bad reputation, but, you know, I know you said you rewatched it, now you remembered why you didn't like it. But, you know, rewatching it, and even at the time, I was never really bothered by this episode. And this is coming from someone who doesn't like season 4 very much. I actually thought this one was pretty enjoyable. We get into it, but I think the big reason, I mean, beyond the football, because that's its own conversation, right? But I think a big reason why people don't like this episode is their use of Mr. Mixoplex, however you pronounce it. I pronounce it, like, many ways over my lifetime.
Yeah, that was a weird one. Like, I think that's definitely a reason why people don't like this, because, for one, it doesn't really like add anything to the overall story apart from that little bit at the end, which kind of connects to the story. And as you said, the use of Miss Mixer, I'm just gonna not even try to say his name. The use of that character is a bit of very left field. Like, as soon as you think Smallville, like, you do think of all the reinventions of a lot of the characters that they do, and this one is probably one of the more wild, like. Not really anything to do with the original character, and I guess that must be why people didn't like it. But for me, I think the main reason I kind of didn't enjoy it was just because it was very much like, I don't want to say a bottle episode, but almost a bottle episode where it didn't really affect the larger like story at hand.
Well, it did. It wrapped up football for now. I mean, Clark still has to deal with. He got a scholarship to MITU, apparently, as we find out, and he'll have to, you know, make his own decisions about not playing football, but at least this is like, okay, these high school Smallville football years of Clark are over. And, you know, as much as I complain about it, it did feel very rushed, you know, because if you have Devoted, right, is the Facade, right? There's Facade and Devoted. That's episodes 3 and 4. And then you have 5 and 6 or a run and Transference. And this is episode 7 and the season's already over. And it's like, if you're going to have him play football, like, that's the thing about this whole episode. Like, he's like, oh, I can't let the team down. You don't know these people. You don't have no emotional connection to any of these teammates,
like,
right?
I don't know these people. And so, like, I just assume they, like, you know, because I've barely even seen these people. Like, there's 3 characters that you see on the team. And, like, 2 of them, like, obviously one's Clark. And the other 2 are just these random jock guys that I've never seen before. But they were undefeated, so apparently they were successful.
Yes. Yeah. But between that and makes us play. Yeah, I mean, you think about reinventions of characters, right? So Mr. Mixpitalik, which I believe is the correct pronunciation. I always called him Mr. Mixoplex forever, but apparently that's wrong.
That's what I always called him as well.
Okay, good. So we must have heard that somewhere, right? Like in a cartoon or something, right?
I feel like that might have been the way they said it in the animated series.
Maybe so. See, that's my favorite version of the Gilbert Gottfried. Ah, I'm Gilbert Gottfried, right? He's the perfect voice for that on Superman the Animated Series, and I love those episodes with him. He's also, so that's like my ideal Mr. Mixoplex. But, you know, he was in Superboy, actually the forgotten Superman TV show. He's played by Michael J. Pollard, who was actually a guest star on Star Trek, the original series, so that's how I remember him. but he was very comic accurate looking, and he looked ridiculous. I mean, he looked like he does in the comic books with his like little bowler hat and his yellow costume and his shoes and all that, and he's in some episodes there. And then Howie Mandel played him on Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. So
I was just about to ask him, when you say comic accurate, like, do you mean, like, was he, like, diminutive in size as well, or...?
Michael J. Pollard was a smaller in stature guy. So yeah, he wasn't as small as he is in the comics, but he was like a smaller guy.
And did he have the orange dress?
Yeah, he looked exactly like the combo costume.
Oh wow. I think I might need to go back and watch Superboy.
Well, good luck. I understand why they choose to translate this character the way they did. Like, they put him through, like, the Chris Nolan filter, right? Mm. Of, like, Mr. McSpidelik. It's like, yeah, if Chris Nolan directed a Superman movie with this character. And it's fine. Like, I really don't... What did people want? Like, remember, this is season 4. I think people look back harshly on like, the early interpretations of these characters in Smallville. Because they forget this show is supposed to be like 5 years long. It's not supposed to be 10 years. He's not supposed to be in the Justice League fighting Doomsday, Darkseid, and a Kryptonian army, right? In a blur costume, you know, with the Green Arrow and Hawkman, right? This is Clark Kent in high school. And I think that if you're going to put Mr. McSpidelik, which maybe you should, maybe you shouldn't. I mean, I don't know. They did it, and here he is, right? If you're going to put him in Smallville High School with Clark, I think this is the best way to do it. I really don't know a better way they could have gone about it at this point, honestly.
Yeah, it's true. Like, I guess it's not really a character that, like, any other media has even really tackled at all. So, like, it's hard to really even judge it by other interpretations. Like, I think he was in an episode of Supergirl, which I don't really remember too fondly. But,
oh my God, you're right. I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, like, I don't remember even that. Like, I remember that being a little bit more comic accurate, but, I guess there's not really too much you can even compare it to, but as you said, like, in the situation that they're in, like, I guess this is the best they could do with the character, if they were dead set on using him.
Right, because it's not Lex Luthor, it's not, you know, it's not like they're taking, oh, how dare you, this is Mr. McSpidelik, how dare you, it's like, really, guys? And I will say, you know, probably the best comic book, if people are looking for, like, a good story to admit it, is the Alan Moore story, Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow. This is, you know, the end of the golden age of Superman, you know, and that's the final story of bringing all these characters back, and he plays a big role in it at the end, and it makes a lot of sense when you consider he's like this fifth dimensional, you know, super powerful being. So anyway, there you go. There's your pregame talk, so to speak, for this episode. Last bit of trivia I do want to say, and this would have been now the second chance they could have gotten Pete back on the show, because Pete's gone, right? He left at the end of season 3. There was never any talk of this, but I had mentioned it, if they wanted to bring it back at the beginning of Facade, when they had that flashback to season 1, that would have been the perfect time, right? To like, oh, look, Pete signifies the high school year, so here he is back at season 1. You know, and Sam Jones looked pretty much the same as he did 3 years earlier. But in Smallville, The Official Companion, season 4 by Craig Byrne, available wherever books are sold. The writer of the episode, Mark Warshaw, explains that the original concept for this episode, or a part of it, was to have Pete be on the other high school's football team. And he was going to play against Clark, because I remember Pete moved away. And I guess he finally joined the football team. After remembering the pilot of Smallville, he was going to join the football team. And they just kind of forgot about that, right? But he was going to be on the other team. And this is what Mark Warshaw has to say. He says, quote, "We would have had Pete saying to Clark, 'Listen, dude, this is the first thing I did on my own. You're cheating. I know you're a cheater. I'm going to tell everyone you're cheating.'" So I thought that was interesting, because that's a good conflict to come in between Pete and Clark, because, yeah, Clark is cheating, and this episode kind of, and I like that about this episode, kind of shows the dangers of him playing football, and I think that would have been a really cool way to bring Pete back, to bring Sam Jones III back, but you might appreciate this, being a basketball fan. I don't know if you know this movie or not, but Sam Jones was unavailable because he was shooting Glory Road at the time.
I've not heard of this movie.
It's about the Texas Western basketball team. And it's, honestly, I don't know what year it takes place in, but it's a true story. And Josh Lucas is the coach, and Sam Jones III is one of the players. And it was like, oh man, Pete from Smallville. And that's what he did after he left Smallville. He worked on that movie. So unfortunately, he was unavailable to come back to this episode. But what do you think about possibly bringing Pete back for this episode in that way?
That seems kind of wild. This seems a bit of a contentious, like, way to bring him back. Like, it's I feel like I can't see Pete saying that to Clark. I feel like I'm glad they didn't go that route, because, like, I always look back on as Pete as a really good character and one of my favorites. And just, like, if they brought him back like that, I don't know if that would have sat right with a lot of people. That just sounds kind of a a bit of a weird way to bring him back to like really go out clock like that. That's really weird. I'm glad they didn't do that.
Well, I don't know. You say that, but I think it would have been better than Hero.
Oh, okay.
What's up with this self-flogging?
I'm watching the sports editor's tape of the game, trying to figure out what happened, but it's like I had no control. Like, my mind was sending one message, but...
But your body was getting another.
Yeah.
It's Mikhail.
The foreign exchange kid?
Mixopithelic. Say that three times fast. He's our new resident puppet master. This is kind of embarrassing, but he made me kiss him.
Made you?
Yeah, it was just like how you explained your trip. It was like someone else was controlling me.
Okay, but why would he want me to throw the game?
Clark, he's the biggest bookie in the school.
The power to control the odds.
Let me do a search on his name. I guess I shouldn't be surprised that Mixopithelic didn't bring anything up.
Well, what's that?
It's Mikhail's name backwards.
Looks like a nursery rhyme gone bad.
Yeah, it's some legend from the Piatori region in the Balkans. That's near where Mikhail's from.
Says the region has been terrorized for centuries by a bloodline of people who can control the hand of luck.
It's not exactly luck if they're controlling people. What does it say about the backwards name?
The family changed their name a century ago and fled the area to escape the stigma after a village mysteriously burned to the ground.
Jinx is the seventh episode of Smallville's fourth season. It aired on November 3rd, 2004. It was written by Mark Warshaw and directed by Paul Shapiro. Now, Mark Warshaw, he was actually in charge of the Chloe Chronicles, and he did a lot of other behind-the-scenes social media stuff, like the Smallville Ledger website, things of that nature. So this was kind of a big deal for him to kind of jump off from the social media at the time, or you know, extended material of the show to get on the show proper. So the cast was really happy for him, and that was a big deal for him. And he actually got to throw in a reference. Something that Craig Byrne always likes to talk about, canonize something for him. We'll talk about that when that moment happens. Friend of the show, Craig Byrne, obviously webmaster Krypton site and writer of the official companion books 4 through 7. So anyway, just give Mark Warshaw his credit there. So the episode starts out and we have a football game. And you know, traditionally they play high school football games at night, like Friday Night Lights. That's where that term comes from. But because night shooting is way too expensive, Smallville High School is once again playing in the middle of the day. So I guess this is a Saturday.
This is something that I would have never guessed. Like as an Australian, I would never have understood this.
So you know, we have them playing in their game. Now I might have misremembered what they talked about in Transference, because I believe in Transference, Jason was like, "Hey, Clark, the big championship game is on Saturday, and there's going to be a scout there from Metropolis," and that was like the big deal why he quit and all that stuff, right? But this is a game before the championship game, so I don't know. Maybe I misheard something last episode. I don't want to just flat out say they just disregarded that, but I feel like they said the championship game is coming up next, and this is not that. This is the game before that. So anyway, just throwing that out there. So.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of the continuity is just out of whack. Like, there's this game, and then there's the next game, and that's what I thought as well. But I just learned to roll with it after I realized what kind of episode we were getting.
What if the entirety of last week's episode happened in between this episode? What about that?
Maybe that happened in the fifth dimension.
There you go. So let's talk about the fifth dimension. So we have the football game going on. Chloe goes underneath the stadium to do a shady meetup with who we find to be Mr. Mikhail Mixopithelic, as he pronounces to her. So what is your first impressions of this guy?
Something that I'm not really unaware of the seedy underbelly of high school. I've never come across a gambling ring in my high school, but he seemed kind of like your typical, like, charming foreign exchange student with a bit more of a mysterious past.
Yes, yes. And he has that Eastern European accent, which is so This makes him so mistake. I think it works. I don't find it cheesy. I think it works if they're saying he's from for a name like that, it has to have come from a unique part of the world, and I buy it. So, and I found this bit of trivia, which I didn't know if it was part of the costume design, but apparently it's part of the actor Trent Ford's own personal wardrobe. He wears an intricate necklace made up of pieces from places he has traveled to all over the world. So I think that kind of fits with the character, and he has that interesting looking necklace on the whole time. So
didn't even notice it, to be honest. Not appreciating the wardrobe choices.
Did you ever watch Sliders?
I have heard of it, but I've not watched it.
Okay. To me, Trent Ford here looks exactly like Jerry O'Connell, who starred in Sliders. I mean, he's done other things, but that's his big thing. Like, if you go Google an image of Jerry O'Connell and then Google an image of Trent Ford, I mean, you could believe they were related, if not, you know, like a stand-in. And that's what I'm like, man, they got like Jerry O'Connell's younger brother here. Jerry O'Connell has gone on to voice Superman in a lot of animated shows recently as well as voicing Shazam on the Justice League Unlimited show. So anyway,
there I just looked this guy up, man. I can see what you mean. They're like, okay. For me, the callback for Jerry O'Connell is he was in Kangaroo Jack. That's the only movie I know of it.
Of course you would know that.
Classic Australian reference.
Classic Australian. So, Chloe, we understand, obviously, she must be doing some kind of undercover investigation here. She wants to put $80 on the crows, and he's like, oh, a game has started already. Usually don't take bets, but for you, I'll make exception. See? So she does that, and he's like, I have a bad feeling about quarterback today. She's like, well, I never bet against Clark Kent. So she goes on her way, having placed her bet. And we get to the game, and let me just talk a little football here. They are 4th and 10 on the 40. So, and they're down by 3 with 10 seconds left. I don't, they really should, I don't know which 40-yard line they're on, but they should have tried for a field goal here to tie it. That's my suggestion as being a football fan here.
Maybe you should have replaced Coach Teague. The job's open now.
Yeah, the job is open, yeah. So you mentioned, you know, assistant coach. Talk about the head coach, Coach Quigley. Now, from my point of view, this is the first time we meet Coach Quigley, but apparently, checking IMDb, the actor Rob Freeman was in Facade and Devoted as well. I guess he was just on the sidelines. I don't know. But he looks a lot more like a real football coach I would expect to look than Jason Teague. That's all I'm saying, so...
Yeah, he's a bit more like of that grizzled kind of look to him that I guess you would find out as a football coach. Like, I'm not really like the only one I know of is Bill Belichick. That's the only guy that I know. But I guess he kind of has that kind of a more weathered look.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't know. I would respect that guy as a football coach more than, you know, Jason Teague. So, and again, this is talking like we were talking about before. Like, I wish they would have expanded the cast of characters here. We couldn't. Like, these characters could have been like the coach, the teammates, the running back, just get to know more than just Clark and Jason Teague, you know, for the team. Maybe I don't care. But anyway, we see that McHale, we'll just call him Matt because it's easier to say. I might throw in Mixes Pitalik every now and then. But, you know, McHale he's in the stands and he sees the play happen and looks like the Crows are going to go ahead and score the touchdown and win, even though the field goal would have been the smarter play, in my opinion. That's what I would have done if I were playing Madden. Video game for football, for those who don't know. So
I know that.
Yeah, yeah. So Crow's guys run into the end zone. McHale says fumble, and he fumbles the ball. So then Clark picks it up, and then now Clark's going to run it in. And then McHale says trip. So Clark, it looks like, you know, he loses his balance, and then he knocks this defensive guy, like, you know, 10 feet out of the way just by falling over, and then Clark falls in for the touchdown. You know, Superman is vulnerable to magic. This is the first introduction of magic on Smallville. This is the season that decided to be the season of magic, because we have this week and witches next week and the rest of the season. That's a weird thing, and I'm not like, I'm not in love with the idea of magic and Superman, but it has been it's an established thing in comic books that is one thing that can be a weakness for him.
Just quickly, like with Superman's powers in football, like what exactly is like. Does these superpowers like give him the ability to make these perfect passes? Like, what is it about it? Like, is it got like super accuracy? Like, I don't. I kind of like drew a blank with me. Like, what exactly is it about his powers that make him such a good like thrower? Obviously, like you can get the distance and stuff, but like, I guess the supervision might help him. But like, what's your opinion on that?
That's an excellent point, because yes, the danger of him playing football isn't so much of like what he's doing with the skill. It's more just him being there, right? And knocking people over and getting ran into, right? And having them get hurt, as we see in this episode. You're right, though. So much of sports is hand-eye coordination. So it doesn't matter how big and strong you are, right? You have to, like, have the repetition. So I'm just going to... I mean, him and Pete used to play hoops all the time. I guess he used to maybe play catch with his dad. I don't know. But you're right. Just him being Superman alone doesn't make him an expert football player. I mean, we see him practicing, as we've seen in some episodes, of, like, throwing the football through the, you know, the tire and all that stuff. Classic football stuff. So the Superman part of it doesn't really help him in football. It's more so the strength and the stamina, right, and the speed, I would say. But, I mean, and as he tells Jonathan later in the episode, he's like, I have to make a conscious choice of to fall down and get hit. Like, I don't know. That's a lot. Like, to think, like I got to go fast, but not too fast. You know, that's got to be a tough thing to do.
Yeah, and then you also got to make sure that you're, as you said, the hand-eye coordination is there. And if you're thinking about all that kind of stuff, all the other stuff as well, so you're not hurting people, like that's pretty intense to be thinking about, like all in like the game. Well, I guess he's got the super speed to be able to make like decisions quickly, but
right, especially for a guy like Clark Kent, who in Superman, right, who his big weakness is he didn't really think things through. I mean, you think just imagine how many things have to be going on in his mind when he's out there on that field, but. But anyway, the player, the defensive player, they win the game. I was like, yeah, the Crows are going to the state championship. Ah, you know, which would not have been played at Smallville High School Stadium, by the way. But we'll get to that when we get there. You know, they're all happy, but the Crows and all them, but the other team, they're all like really concerned because of this defensive player. He's like on the ground, like, oh my God. Now people are looking at Clark like he's like, you know, the devil here. And yes, he hit the guy because he has superpowers, and that's why it hurt. But you know, freak injuries happen in football all the time. Yes, this is kind of suspicious, and it happened because Clark is, like, you know, super dense or whatever because of the yellow sun rays or whatever, right? But at the same time, it's not some crazy, like that people looking at him like he just shanked the guy on the field, you know?
Yeah, like, I was having the same thought. Like as soon as he took the guy down, like, Teague and the guy's teammate, like, they look at him like he's just, like, committed a murder or something. It's like, it's part of sport. It's like injuries happen.
Yeah, I mean, like, I know we wish no ill will on this other guy, but it's like freak things happen all the time. You're absolutely right.
It's not like something that he wouldn't be able to come back from. It was like a broken collarbone or something. Like, it's something you can come back from. It's not like he ended his career or anything.
Every injury sucks, okay? But for Tony Romo had lots of broken collarbones over his career, and he came back many times. So anyway, that's our big hook for the main credits, right? And then we come back and we have a plus one for a hospital visit because this character is in the hospital. We never know his name or anything. But I will tell you, I mean, I feel sorry for this guy because this is his senior year. Now, I don't know if he had any scholarships going. Maybe those will be taking away now because he's going to be injured and his parents are there in the hospital room for him. Like this kid doesn't say anything, but I honestly do feel kind of sorry for him because just he was in the wrong place at the wrong time playing against the wrong guy, right?
I mean, to be honest, like, it could have been worse. Like, Clark could have, like, crushed him. Like, he could have, like,
no mercy
destroyed
from
him.
Chess. Like, right, it could have been worse. It could have been worse.
Like, seriously, like, this guy's not going to be alive, to be honest.
Okay, well, fair enough. Fair enough, Chess. But, yeah, the doctor says that his collarbone's broken in two places, and then Coach Quigley and Coach Teague there, and then Clark shows up, I guess, just to check in. And Teague pulls him aside, and he's like, "Hey, you know, there's been talk about, you know, if you're doing PEDs, or you know, I don't understand how you could have broken this guy's collarbone just by shoving him." And Clark's like, "I don't know, adrenaline." He's like, "Well, adrenaline doesn't explain how you're so good at football and all this stuff." So to your point earlier, Jazz. But Clark's like, "You think I'm in steroids?" And he's like, "No, I told Coach, you know, Quigley that Clark Kent would never do that." So. And as we find out later, they wanted Clark to take a drug test, but Jason never made him do it, which is, again, Jason just, you know, I would say that's kind of out of character, but at the same time, this is the coach who's dating a student. So I guess he likes playing dangerously, doesn't he, Jazz?
But, and also the head coach kind of like turns a blind eye because later in the episode, KT tells him that he finally told the coach that Clark's taking it in a pass. So he's just like, this coach is very not attentive, it seems.
Yeah, it's like, all right, whatever you say, Jason.
Like, well, I want to play on this team.
So this is the kind of stuff, if they wanted to have Clark play football, like, this is the stuff, like, the struggles I actually wanted to see,
because it's like crap. Like Clark really does realize like how dangerous it is for him to be out there. And he, I mean, obviously it was an accident, but I mean, it was caused by Mikhail, right? But this is stuff that can happen with him out there. So I'm glad the show actually went there with this stuff, because these are the facts of Superman playing football, I think, with mere mortals. So our next scene is between Lex and Mikhail, Mrs. Pitlick, and apparently he is a foreign exchange student from the Luther Corp Foreign Exchange Scholarship. And I must say we got continuity points for this episode, because two episodes in a row now, after Run, we see the painting that Lex got in Run still in his office. So good job by the set decorators, huh?
Yeah, I was definitely, my eye was definitely guided towards that, because you see like the massive like lit up like glass frame there. Like they definitely wanted to make sure you knew it was there.
So good on him, right? But so he's questioning Mikhail here, because he's like, my father brought you over here, but you're a perennial C student. I just don't understand what he saw in you. And he's like, oh, well, my skills are far beyond what's on a report card, you know. And it is one of those deals where it's like, you feel like like everybody knows this character. Like, oh, Mikhail! You know, it's like, come on, guys. This is a Trevor, right? As we have the name we decided on. Like, guys came out of nowhere who've been established for a while, but everybody just accepted he's there. You know, this makes sense that now, you know, Lionel is, you know, in prison. Lex is, you know, checking in on all his father's dealings, and he decided to check in on this guy who's at Smallville High School. So, you would think that Lionel would have put this guy to use at some point, right?
Yeah, you think that this guy is, like, like really heavy hitter for like this guy could get a lot of stuff done for Lionel, but apparently he's only coming out now that he's in jail. So like how convenient.
Too little, too late, Lionel. But Lex is cutting a lime to put in a drink, right? And then to kind of like show off his powers, but not really show off his powers, because he doesn't tell Lex that he did it. He says cut, and Lex like, this is a horrible, horrible cut. Did you see how bad this cut was on Lex's finger?
I mean, it seemed like a pretty sharp knife, so like I can imagine.
Like, I've cut my hand a few times, yeah, you know, because I'm no Superman. I know, disappointing, but and you know, it's certain areas like that, and it's like, holy hell, like that's got Lex just kind of like licks it around. I'm like, that is awful. That needs like immediate medical attention. Like, this is the tip of the finger, you know? I mean, it's a bad cut.
Yeah, I've cut my thumb before, and it's definitely not great. But it seems like that like triggers Lex to be like, oh, this guy is like, I don't know if it was the fact that it happened, and he was just like, I've seen similar things to this before, so it obviously like triggered something in his brain to like, there's something more about this guy, even though he didn't like actually see him do that connection to make him cut himself.
True, and you know, Lex does take it like a champ, but also he has that, you know, enhanced healing ability, I guess. That high white blood cell count, maybe that'll take care of that. I don't know. So then we cut to the torch, and Chloe's there, and Mikhail comes in, and you know, they have some back and forth here, and it's like, did he not know that she was like on the Smallville torch? Like, if I were him, right? If I'm doing this underground, which by the way, this does not really exist to my knowledge. I didn't hang out with that kind of crowd. Maybe I'm wrong, but you know, and
that was gonna be my next question.
Yeah, but like a small town high school, like I seriously doubt there's some underground gambling ring. And then he's like going off to Metropolis to do some more. I don't know, but like, if I were him, rule one: don't talk to reporters, right?
Yeah, like Chloe wasn't very discreet. Like it seemed like she was doing something shifty. So like, you think that he'd be keyed in on that, but apparently not.
He knows that she's on the torch, and she's gonna write this article. And I mean, what he does here is kind of clever. He tells her, "Look, I want full anonymity, and I'll give you a very deep scoop on, you know, on the real, you know, deep dive inner workings of this gambling scheme that's prevalent in Smallville, Kansas, right?"
It's like, what is the deepest scoop that, like, you have the guy that's, like, running the gambling ring?
Yeah, I mean, how much...
Do you want to just, like, rat out the other guys that are doing the gambling?
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, she is intrigued, though. And I think part of it here, and actually, again, continuity points, right? He asked her, like, what are you going to do with the money? She's like, oh, I'm going to use it on textbooks because my dad's still in unemployment. I need to start saving up for college. So I guess Gabe still has not gotten a job. You think freaking Lex Luthor would hook Gabe up with a job. Right, I mean, Lionel's in prison now. Come on, help a brother out.
Yeah, like you think that like Luthor would want to try and get some brownie points with the main cast of that we've come to know, but obviously not. Obviously, he's still living on the land. Yeah.
So, Mikhail here mentions that he's got to go to Metropolis because the Sharks game is tonight, and they have an 8-1 odds to win. and he kind of convinces her to put the winning she had from the Smallville game onto the Sharks game, because he's just kind of pulling her into his, like, you know, his web or whatever, right? So she puts that money down, and we'll see what happens there. But then we cut to Jonathan and Clark talking, and again, Jonathan is like, look, son, there's more to life than championships. You need to step out and play the game, and we're going to have a victory party tonight, and I'm sure Coach Quigley will be there, and I'll call him beforehand. And Clark's like, no, I'll do the right thing, and I'll quit. And I agree. Like, this, again, this is all magic aside. This stuff is exactly why Clark should not be playing football. So I've been with Jonathan since season one when he was on this point of view.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to argue. Like, it's a massive disadvantage to everyone, and there's like a danger overall. So, like, it's, you can't really argue with Jonathan. Like, you obviously want to side with Clark because he's the protagonist, but he's just, It's a really hard one.
This season is full of stuff like that. This season is like, are we supposed to root for Jason and Alana? Because this is kind of wrong. It's like, are we supposed to root
exactly.
for Clark? Because this is kind of wrong. So I don't know. This season has me questioning my moral high ground and moral center, I should say. So there's a victory party, I guess, because they won the game. They won the championship. Of course, they have it at the Talon, right? And in case you forgot, because it's real easy to forget, Martha is the new Lana, right? The old Lana is the new Lana, right? Because Martha played Ned O'Toole, played Lana in Superman 3. She now runs the Talon. So she is there at this victory party just working, you know? So she sees all this go down. And Jason is there because Clark wants to go talk to Jason, and he wants to, you know, tell him that he's going to, you know, quit. But right before he can, like, he gets, like, intercepted by all his teammates. He's like, oh, man, we're going to state, and we're going to get scholarships, and blah, blah, blah. And, like, all the cheerers are like, oh, hey, Clark, woo. And they bring out this cake, and then Coach Quigley comes in. He's like, we got our defense, we got offense, we got a golden arm, right? So Clark gets kind of, like, carried away with, I mean, he feels like he can't let these guys down, so he decides not to quit. But Jason could tell he was going to. So everybody, like, Jason's, like, really looks at him, like, really shamefully. And I'm like, you didn't know what he was going to say, you know? And,
it was pretty comical overall. It was like he was literally about to tell him, and then as soon as he tried to say something, everyone just like swarms to him and just like starts shouting him with his praise, and he can't even get a word out to Jason.
Clark looks so suspicious here too, because he's like, he looks not happy at all about this, and it's like that would raise suspicions to me if I were all these other people, right? If him and Jason looking at each other's mom looks disapproving, but hey, he can't back out now because he's peer pressure, I guess. So
he's in too deep.
Back at the torch is, you know, the next day, I guess, and because I don't, if this was the weekend, why is Chloe going to the torch every Saturday or Sunday? I mean, I don't know. She has used her money that she's won on her bet with the Sharks, obviously, to buy, like, you know, sunglasses and shopping, like the most cliche stuff ever, right? And she's like, oh, I just took 10% off the top. Everything else is going to go towards college. Like, sure, whatever.
That's how it always starts.
Yeah, right? So and this is really out of character for her. I mean, she's kind of falling down this, like, she's getting caught up in it a little bit, but she's still going to write the article, and he keeps, like, trying to, like, string her along, like, oh, there's so much more I could show you. And she's like, you're just trying to keep me from writing the article. And he's like, you understand, I always get what I want. And he says, stop. And she can't move. And he says, kiss. And then she kisses him. And, she, you know, it's good acting on Allison Mack's part, because she's like doing the whole, like, I don't want to do this, but I have to kind of thing. It's him displaying his power, right? And then he walks off, right? And he never tells her, like, go. And I thought, oh, okay.
I didn't even think of that.
So I thought, because she's still kind of frozen there, right? She's still kind of looking around like she's stuck. And I'm like, okay, I guess his power, like, wears off after all, right? But
yeah, because he has to tell her.
Yes, exactly. But later on, he's like, breathe. So I'm like, okay, is this a, did someone, can we not have just ADR'd him saying go at some point, you know, when he walked off? But anyway, I'm like, oh, poor Chloe. Is there a deleted scene, right, where he comes back in and, you know, and he's like, oh, sorry.
He's like, oh, damn, I forgot to unfreeze it.
So meanwhile, Clark he's trying to figure out a way to play the game, but not be, you know, a danger to others. So he has this little sliver of kryptonite. I'd be very interested to see how he got this. Like, does he break it off himself? I mean, I don't know. But he's practicing football. He's doing great, you know, and then he pulls out the kryptonite. And he's trying to hold it, and he is you know, he still throws it kind of far, but his aim is way off. So he's terrible. And then Martha comes in. And I really like this. I like that Martha got to say some stuff here, too, to Clark, because she tells him, I've never seen you slip away from responsibility before, you know, talking about how he was going to quit the night before. So I like that. That's convicting you in only the way your parents can, right?
Yeah, it's more or less like I'm not angry, just disappointed, that kind of thing.
But then, you know, it kind of, you think she's going one way, but then she kind of zigs and zags and goes a different way. Because she's just like, the answer is no, Clark. I've never seen you trip, because earlier he had asked his parents like if they had ever seen him trip before. And they hadn't. So she thinks something else is going on here. She believes Clark. But at the same time, she tells him, look, you need to figure out what that thing was, and then we'll let you play on Saturday. I guess it's kind of the condition, right? I guess that's what I took from this scene with her, right?
Yeah, it's kind of just like she's just definitely taking a softer approach than Jonathan's like hard stance no to it, which is I guess what you come to love about Martha. She's like, she wants to see like the better like part of Clark. How she's like, she knows she's raised him well, and like she knows that he would never like do anything on purpose to put anybody in danger. But like obviously she also knows the danger of his powers being out there. But as I said, just taking a more softer approach to it than Jonathan.
So with this mandate from his mom, Clark is studying the game tape, right? He's not looking at it, I don't know, in the locker room or the football office or things where this would be. He's looking at it at the torch, because we have to, you know, get him and Chloe together, right? And this is a very egregious case of, like, let's forget what happened last week. I mean, not forget it, but just overlook it. Because she comes in and she's like, it's okay, Clark, you don't have to leave. And he's like, oh, does that mean we're talking again? And she's like, that just means I'm taking the risk that I'm going to get Dr. Jekyll today instead of Mr. Hyde or whatever. I'm like, really? This is how you follow up Lionel destroying his personal relationships in the last episode? Like, I thought that was pretty weak.
Yeah, it was definitely one of those things where you kind of have to just brush your hands of it and just, like, they just take it as okay, they should be having this kind of relationship in this episode just for the point of the plot.
I understand, because it's episodic TV, but I would hope by the fourth season they would have understood, you know, effect and, you know, cause and effect between these people's relationships. But
how silly.
Anyway, he basically says to her, because he's looking at the game tape that Harry tripped, and he's like, yeah, it's like my mind wanted to do one thing, but my body wanted to do another. And she's like, oh, it's Mikhail. He's like, oh, the foreign exchange kid? I'm like, so they all know who he is. It's that case of having a new kid that everybody knows about that you've never seen before. They start talking about him, and she explains the same things happened to both of them. So fortunately, they happen to come across each other here. So a very, very contrived, but I understand they need to do this to get the plot going. And so they Google his name, and it's like, there's no results, like Mrs. Pitalik. But it does say, did you mean this? And it's his name backwards, right? And I love that, because in the comic books, traditionally, that's how Superman gets rid of him. Like, it has him say his name backwards, or see it backwards, or say it twice, or something like that. So, I enjoyed the changes they made to make Mr. Mix Pitalik work in this context.
Yeah, for what it was pretty good. But I question like what they thought they would find on a. I guess like he's just like another kid, just typing in some random kid's name. Like, would you expect that you're gonna get a bunch of hits?
Well, I guess it's so unique they figure we might find something, right? But as they find it, it turns out like, you know, in his country, right, his part of the world, they had to change their name because that's weird. They changed their name because they were persecuted for their bad reputation of being like tricksters and bringing, you know, there's a picture of, like, a black cat or whatever, right? And I'm like, if you're going to change your name, why just reverse the letters? Why not come up with, I don't know, like Xavier or something? If it started with an X, I don't know. So it was a very odd joke, but I enjoy it. That's a great like nod to the comic books, I thought, with the reverse. I thought I laughed when I saw that for the first time, and I still think it's a great little wink and a nod to the comic books. But so they established that they got driven out by Locus. They filed that away in the Bat computer, right, to pull out later and figure out how to use that to their advantage. But meanwhile, Clark decides that he can get him deported, right? Because if he's here on a Luther Court scholarship, he goes to talk to Lex. Lex tells him, I'm surprised you didn't go to your principal about this or Coach T, but I can see why that'd be kind of awkward. So now it's kind of out in the open now, at least between the two of them, that Lana and Jason are together. And I love Lex's line. He's like, I'm sure I'm not the only one who noticed Lana's fondness for quarterbacks. So
classic Lex dig.
It's a great, great callback to, of course, Whitney in season one. And or he's like, even those that are retired, because obviously Jason's retired now. And then Clark's now a quarterback. So, yeah. So, Lana, you know, 4 years in, she's got a type, I guess. So, and also this is a great, this harkens back to like early Smallville scenes between Clark and Lex, right? I love what Clark says. He says, "I guess the if you love someone, set them free" thing kind of backfired.
When I heard that line, I was like, "What? Like, what are you trying to say?" Like, I don't.
Well, it made me laugh, but because it's like, that's the thing. It's like, if you love someone, you let him go or whatever, right? And so he did that in season three, but he didn't expect her to like come back with a new boyfriend, right? That's the one variable you don't take into account in that equation, is of some of these people meeting somebody else. So this establishes kind of where they stand on this stuff, and this comes into play at the end of the episode in their final scene together, which is a great scene. But so there's some really good, again, this episode's got some really good Clark and Lex stuff together, and good Lex stuff, period. So I'm, you know.
Usually when you have Clark and Lex together, you get some good stuff, even if it is like a little bit like even if it's not like the greatest, like it's always pretty good when those two are together. Like the best, the worst Clark and Lex scene is still better than a lot of scenes in most shows, I reckon.
Absolutely, and a lot of that is because of Welling and Rosenbaum and the chemistry together for sure. So, so then our next scene is Lana and Jason, and this is Lana's first scene. Yes, she was in the crowd, you know, at the game earlier, but this is really her one of two scenes of this episode. And at the end, we'll talk about a third scene she was supposed to be in, but it got deleted. But Lana and Jason here talking, and they're talking about Clark, and it's just a nothing scene. And it's like, I don't know, like they could have just removed this scene, right, and put in the deleted scene. What did you think, Jess?
Yeah, like we'll get to it later. But the deleted scene, I felt, conveyed the same thing that I was trying to say in this scene. But I felt like it was a bit more potent, like coming from Lana, interaction between Lana and Clark, rather than this one. This one was kind of just like it gave you like a little bit of what they're trying to say, but I feel like the deleted scene gave you a lot more in like the same amount of time.
Right, and it's between Clark and Lana, you know, two of your, you know, main big three characters, as opposed to, you know, her and Jason, which again, like I've been saying this in most of these season four episodes, you could remove the Lana scenes, right, with Jason, most of them, and it would serve no purpose. And in fact, it would improve the episode because she continues to be so disconnected from the main plot. It's like, it's such an illogical thing to do with like, oh, because at this point, you know, she's the second build after Tom Welling, Kristen Crick, right? And it's like, I know what we'll do with our female lead. We'll give her this really weird subplot that doesn't tie into anything. Give her like two scenes an episode where she doesn't talk to the main cast or is involved in the A plot. It's like that is, just doesn't make any sense. So then Lex decides he's going to, deport Mikhail. He calls him in, and because he's, again, like Mikhail, he's not, they brought him over here to do stuff for the Luthers. He's really not holding up his end of the bargain. So he's just screwing around in high school. Lex is going to deport him, but then, you know, I really didn't understand this, right? Mikhail was like, oh, but what if, you know, let's bet on the big game. And, you know, I mean, he's like, I understand men like you, and, you know, you always want what's out of your clutches. And, like, I get they're trying to say that he understands games and stuff, because, I mean, I kind of like that about it. Like, at least he has a thing, you know, as a character, right?
Well, I guess that actually is pretty pretty spot on in terms of the characterization of the original character. Like, he was always, like, a mischievous character that liked games, because it wasn't his original MO that he liked. He just wanted to play games with Superman.
Yeah, so I find this, because I find the original comic character pretty ridiculous. So
yeah, I'm after.
So I like this update of the character. Like, I'm not offended by it, but it, you know, anyway. I don't get why Lex humors him here, though. Like, honestly, if I were Lex, I'd be like, yeah, whatever. I'm just gonna send you away. Like, I didn't really buy Lex being won over by his argument here to keep him around for this bet.
I guess Lex just likes to live dangerously as well.
Yeah. Lex and Jason, all these characters, Lana, right? Clark on the football field. Clark, man, everyone, every character in this episode is doing some questionable things, right? But then we get, this is a pretty good scene. This is really our only true, like, confrontation between the two of them. I mean, there's one at the end, but there's two at the end, I guess, but they go so quickly. Mixes Piddlet comes to Clark's loft, and Clark tells him, he's like, I thought you'd be on your way back to the village of the damned by now. Which, first of all, Clark, damn, man, that's a little offensive, just because he's, like, from Eastern Europe. Like, am I, you know?
Yeah, it's just like, wow, racist watch?
I know, right? I was like, well, that kind of took me back. But then I assume this was some kind of reference, because there is a movie, Village of the Damned, that Christopher Reeve starred in, with Mark Hamill, by the way. I haven't seen it, but it's like, it's got Superman and Luke Skywalker, like my two childhood heroes. I need to go watch that at some point.
Superman and Jericho.
Indeed, very good, very good. I assume that was a reference, you know, like a cheeky reference to a Chris Reeve movie. But at the same time, it is, as you said, it's a little bit racist, I think. So, But he explains to Clark, and so he has him choke. He's like, choke, and Clark, you know, he can't breathe. And I really like his explanation here of why he's like, look, here's the deal. All right? I'm betting big on this game. I need you to play in the game, because if you don't, people aren't going to bet, and my profits go down. So I need you to be in the game and then lose the game. Right? So that's why I'm not just going to, like, kill you right now or something. Right? And I thought, you know what? That's a very logical explanation of gambling and all the angles, right?
You gotta be able to... If your odds go down, then you're not going to make as much money. So I guess, like, he had it all figured out, but like, it just shows his grip on his own motivations, which is what you want out of a character ultimately, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean, again, like, he's consistent, and I get it.
You're turning me around. This is the best character.
so he walks off, right, and Clark is still choking. I'm like, okay. Because, you know, I don't remember this episode verbatim, right? I'm like, were you just going to cut the commercial and, like, he's going to be fine because it wears off? But no, he says, breathe again. And then Clark starts breathing. So that's what made me think back to the Chloe scene where he just walked off and she was frozen there. So then we get our next scene at the high school, and Clark and Chloe are talking, and then they talk about locusts, right, and how they were able to drive out the Mixes Piddalick, however you say that backwards, family. From their town back in the day. And she mentions there's frequencies involved, right, of locusts, and if you change their frequencies, they can't fly anymore, so it's a permanent jam of their signal. It's kind of like Mars Attacks or Star Trek Beyond, right? That's the way I justified it. But Clark, there is this facepalm-inducing line, like, where he says, like, so what do they do more than eat crops than a single bound? I was like, why did you do that, show? Why did you have to say that? I facepalmed.
Yeah, you get a couple of those this season, I reckon. Just like ones that you just unnecessary callbacks.
And again, if Superman doesn't exist and like the George Reeves Show narration, like, leap, stall, Billy, get a single bound, right? Or even the Fleischer cartoons came up with that, really. No one would be saying that.
Yeah, that's not something you would ever say.
You're referencing pop culture that doesn't exist. So anyway, Chloe's like working on it. She's like, okay, we need to find out where he is. And like, oh, well, he's definitely going to be at the game because, you know, so much he's going to exert his influence on the game. So she goes off to save the day or figure out what to do to save the day. And what do we get here, Jazz? We get mid-2000s full glory. Green Day's Boulevard of Broken Dreams. And I got to tell you, in high school, I loved this song. What did you think of this moment?
Same here. Like, I was just thinking the same thing. This is the kind of thing that I'll be listening to, like, in high school all the time. And I was actually kind of, like, singing along to it the whole time as well.
I walk a lonely road.
The only one that I have ever known.
Don't know where it goes. It's so, like, CW teenager drama, but I was there for it.
Yeah, I was definitely feeling it.
And then, so not only that, not only the Green Day Boulevard of Broken Dreams, like, this was like the hit on light rock stations of the mid-2000s, right? We have a plus one for product placement. Pete's not here, but in his honor, product placement continues, right? Sam Jones was not available, but the product placement was Old Spice Red Zone. And we just see a cutaway to it in Clark's locker. It's just the most blatant product placement I've seen on the show yet.
Now, I know Old Spice is a thing, but it, like, Red Zone, that's a football reference, isn't it?
Well, yes. In football, the red zone is between the 20-yard line and the end zone, so maybe that's why they thought the football tie-in.
So is this a real thing?
Oh, it's a real thing. No, I used this deodorant for several years because of this episode. Because it's like, oh, I got to get my Old Spice Red Zone. So it works, people. As much as I make fun of it, product placement works. I'm living proof. I kid you not, I probably used this for a good, what was this? So this was senior high school. I probably used it for at least 6 or 7 years after this. The Old Spice
Red Zone. Let's get some more sponsors for Always Holding On to Smallville.
This episode of Always Holding Smallville brought to you by Old Spice. So not only is it here, though, like, I always remember the deodorant in the locker. Right, but it's on the scoreboard, and it's also in the stands. Like, there's a big banner, right, that says Old Spice.
And so, you also hear the announcer say it as well. If you have the subtitles on, yes. It says that brought to you by Old Spice Red Zone.
It's so great, I love it. So it's just, this is the kind of stuff you just gotta laugh, you know, when you see that stuff. So I guess, you know, it's paying the bills. So good on them, right? But one kind of continuity problem is there's no way that Clark could have put his jersey on by himself with those pads on, right? Because we see him, like, suiting up and all. That's why the team gets ready together, so he can help each other, like, get your jerseys on and stuff. Like, think about it. With your elbows, like, or your shoulders trapped under those pads, you cannot put the shirt on over your head and your arms. You need help to do it. So that's I'm just saying that's a physics continuity problem for you right there.
I get it. I didn't even think about it, but you're totally right. Because then they have the shot that they have the shirt coming on. Like you don't see Clark. It's just like sliding onto it, like onto him, like above his head.
So I know that's nitpicking, but I mean, you know, that's what we're here to do. Right?
Ruin the episode.
yeah, that's what put it over the edge, right? You know, as the team's running out, Jonathan's out there, and he's like, Clark! You know, and they have a little father-son moment. And I like this moment, you know, because, again, it's Jonathan saying, look, you can't be out there, blah, 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 blah. And Clark's like, look, this is my choice, my responsibilities. I take responsibilities for my actions. He's like, you can never understand, you know, all the things I have to go through to think about when I'm out there to not hurt people, you know? And so I'm doing it. So I liked the scene. And it's, but that made me think, like, wow, he really does have to think about, like, 150 things when he's on the football field.
Yeah, like this is just like another example of the great chemistry between all the main actors. And just like a side note, like you've watched the most of the Flash TV show, yeah?
Yeah, of course.
Like what do you think is the better like father son relationship? This and him and Clark and Jonathan, or Barry and Henry? Because like both of them are like extremely strong, especially in that first season between Barry and Henry. Like I don't know, they know how to do the father son dynamic well in the WBCW.
That's a good thing. A good question. I would have to give the edge to Jonathan and Clark, you know, just because this is a Smallville podcast and Smallville came first. Although I love John Wesley's ship, obviously. And then his chemistry with Grant Gustin was great. It was only for the one season. And then they kind of like, they wrote him off for some reason. Like, hey, I'm out of jail now, son. See you later. Yeah. I was like, can we not have had that? Not really. I really think they should have given John Wesley's ship like one episode, right? As Henry Allen living in Central City. But because he was like a, because he'd been in jail for 15 years, one, he had that going against him, like catching up with like society, right? And then two, like people looked at him and like, hey, didn't that guy killed his wife kind of thing, right? So like, that would have been a great episode of The Flash that you decided not to make. So I know that's kind of a side tangent what you're asking me, but like, I really wish they would have done that instead of just like, I have to go, okay, see you later. And then they bring him back a couple times and they kill him off.
Yeah, of course, now he's like, random.
Of course, now he's Jay Garrick and Barry Allen, and you know, John Wesley's ship is still there, but Henry Allen is gone. Like, do we have to make the Flash an orphan too? So many of these characters are orphans, but yeah, no, I love their chemistry. I love Jesse L. Martin's chemistry with Grant Gustin on the show. I mean, I love that whole bond there as well.
Yeah, as I said, like the father son dynamic.
Yeah, it's just as powerful, right? Those are all. Yeah, there's a strong tradition of fathers. Yeah, even Lex and Lytle, right? There's a strong tradition of strong father son bonds in these shows, and yeah, that's a good point. They have it here as well on Smallville. So, and Jonathan, you know, and that's what that, and he like what he says at the end. He's like, well, you keep sounding more and more like your old man, you know. So yeah, and so he lets him go out on the field. Now, yeah, then we cut to Chloe, who is you know, in the underbelly of the stadium with this device, right? And by the way, this is when we hear over the loudspeaker a sponsor of the game, BB Davenport's Auto Body. And that is that's a reference to a little in joke that Craig Byrne made in the Smallville Ledger and Torch websites. That's a Dukes of Hazzard reference. Uh-huh. So he put it in there because Craig Byrne wrote a lot of this stuff. It's been lost to time now. I guess if you had some internet time machine websites, you might go back. But like the Smallville Ledger and Smallville Torch websites, he used to put in little jokes like that. And so Mark Warshaw, being in charge of that stuff, worked it into the episode he wrote. So they kind of canonized Craig's little in joke there, and he's always been real proud of that. So I just wanted to mention that. So Chloe goes into like the I guess what it's not the announcer booth, because there's an announcer booth somewhere else. It's the backup announcer booth. I don't know why there's technological equipment in here. But she pulls out, by the way, these are BNC cables, because this is my line of work, right? She just pulls them out very incorrectly, I might add, from this machine. And then she, you know, plugs in this device that we see her have, and you're like, where does she get this? And I give the show credit. They actually did have a reasonable explanation to where she acquired it from, right?
Yeah.
But she's got this frequency-emitting device. And again, it's like Mars Attacks or Star Trek Beyond or whatever, right? You got to find the right frequency and cancel out the other thing, and, you know. But how did she? I didn't understand how she found his frequency.
Yeah, it seemed like she didn't ever actually find our frequency, because like, how would she know? Like, it seemed like all the frequencies were disturbing him, and she.
Yeah, was,
like,
she's just turning every frequency on. Yeah.
She was like hoping it worked, like, because like even if she had the right one, she just kept turning it.
Yeah, because that's the deal, right? Like Mikhail's sitting there watching the game. He's like, fumble, trip. Like, none of that stuff is working. And Clark's like, you know, having a good game, right? And you're like, oh, okay. And they had established that once it's broken, it can't get fixed, right? So you're like, okay, well, I guess she achieved her mission. I guess she should pack up and go, right? But she keeps transmitting it. And I actually like kind of they keep cutting back to Mrs. Pitalik in the stands and like, he just looks really defeated, like he doesn't know what to do. It's kind of
yeah, he's got in one part of it, he's got like the worst look. He's just like, ah, oh, come on.
Yeah. Like I love that. Like as a sports fan, I relate to that. Like I've been there, you know.
I was there this afternoon with the Rockets game. Yeah.
So that was me. But his ears start bleeding. I'm like, holy hell, that's pretty extreme, huh?
And nobody around him is just like, dude, your ears bleeding.
Yeah, they're all focused on the big game.
Yeah, it's true. This is the homecoming game, or is it the homecoming game? Some kind of championship game.
By the way, they totally skipped all that this year, right? I mean, think about Facade, right? We have like whole, we always torture the mascot, right? Did they do that this year? Did they not? I don't know. Did Clark help pick a scarecrow to go hang up in the field?
Oh, that would have been good. That would have been a good conflict.
Like there's so many things that could have been like, you know what, guys, we're doing it this way now, right? And he has to like win over the team. Like, again, like it's so obvious. Like the whole promotional poster for the series when it started was Clark strung up in the field, and they did that because that was a tradition of the Smallville High School football team. And here we are at the end of the season, we didn't touch on any of that.
Yeah, because he's one of the co-captains, so you think that he'd be part of like the decision making process of that kind of thing.
It's like, you got to pick a freshman, go hang out on the field. It's like, you know what happened to me? I'm not down for that. And that could be a real conflict for the episode. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's the whole plot. I'm saying it should be a subplot of another episode. And I just feel like it's big. Like, if you're blocking out Clark plays football on the whiteboard in the writer's room, that's like one, that's number one right there. Like, so that, in my opinion.
Yeah, would have made for a really good callback, as you said, but obviously they didn't go that way.
Mikhail, I guess he somehow is able to, I mean, he sees like a speaker and he has a revelation about like, oh, it must be coming. He sits there the whole game, by the way, and this is happening. There's 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter when he decides to do something about this, by the way. Pay attention to the clock next time you watch this episode, people. So I guess maybe because of the way his talent works, he can find where the transmission was coming from, or maybe he knew where the backup transmitter room was. I don't know. But he goes in there and Chloe is still with the signal. Again, the signal has broken him. Right? Because she's like, oh, looks like someone's broken or something, right? Because he tells her to stop and she just punches him. I thought that was a good comeback for her because he kind of forced himself on her before. So for her to, you know, he goes in there thinking his powers might still work and if they don't, she gets to punch him in the face. It's pretty sweet to see. So then he pulls out a knife and it gets pretty dark. He's like, in my country, we learn to adapt quickly or whatever. I'm like, whoa,
yeah.
this got dark.
So 0 to 100 real quick.
That's not a knife. No, that's a knife.
Oh, good, good, good. We got the obligatory reference there. Kangaroo Jack and Crocodile Dundee.
You mentioned Kangaroo Jack, so I had to throw in Crocodile Dundee. So let's get this straight. Mixel Pitalik's powers have not been working the entire game, right?
Yep.
And it looks like Clark and the team have been doing pretty good, right?
Yep.
So somehow, the team is down 21-17. They're still losing.
I was like, you just let the game play out, and he might have just like won.
Exactly. Like, I don't understand. Like, they make this big deal about this guy's going to ruin the game, and Clark's like, I mean, is he not trying? Like, is he trying to play it safe? I mean, I really don't understand. Like, maybe he thought the coast wasn't clear. Right, and so he was still, but you see him like doing well, smiling, looking over the stands, right? So he knows he could win now, right? Like I was confused how they were down with like 10 seconds left in the game. If the other team had not fumbled the ball, they wouldn't even have. They were about to like put it on ice, you know, the game with another touchdown. Like they would have never had a chance.
Yeah, like that was a pure chance. Like, it was a pure chance that they even had a chance to win.
Like, they did not think the football aspect of this episode through. Right.
It's played in the day. They're going to lose. Ah, oh, they don't even know what they're doing.
The only play here, by the way, is a Hail Mary. Because, I mean, they recover the ball in their own territory, sort of. And when there's, like, 10 seconds left and you're down by 4, you have to throw a Hail Mary. And you know, Teague's like, you know, Omaha, whatever. Right? He tells Clark. Clark's like, yeah, okay. Clark, and he goes out, he's about to run out in the field, and then Mixes Pitalik there, he's like, he has Chloe's press pass. I thought it was odd she was wearing that earlier, because she almost never wears a press pass, but it's kind of like, it's Chekhov's press pass. We saw it, and now it pays off. He holds it up to Clark, and he's like, oh, if you win this game, Chloe dies, right? So then he goes out on the field, and he's like, blue 42, blue 42, because that's what you have to say in TV and movies when you like a football. And he looks around, I guess, with his x-ray vision. He's intentionally using it to hopefully see where they might be, and he sees, you know, through the stands that Mrs. Pitalik has the knife, and he's holding Chloe there. So he throws this pass, and then you mentioned the Flash earlier. I guess he enters Flash time, right? Because he goes so fast that after he throws the pass, he runs underneath the stadium, throws the knife, throws Mrs. Pitalik, breaks Chloe's handcuffs, super speeds out into the field in time to be tackled. And I know Superman is fast, but he's not Hiro Nakamura from Heroes. He doesn't stop time. I thought this was a little unrealistic for even Superman speed. What did you think?
Yeah, the only inclination that you get that he's not like ungodly fast is that like you see him just sort of like move, like floating back a little bit, but it's basically like he's just stopped time and just like been able to do anything. Like he could have like read a book. He could have I don't know, like gone to Metropolis and back, and just like this is too much. Like. Because just a couple of weeks ago, we saw that he couldn't match speed with the Flash, and you'd think this is something that the Flash could probably do.
Yeah, I mean he can't even run on water yet. How can he stop time? I mean that's exactly it's just like in Heroes when Hero stops time and everybody's frozen. That'd be one thing, but no, he's allegedly using super speed. Like if anyone was looking at him, and everyone is looking at the quarterback when they throw a ball, right? So you're telling me in a fraction of a second he did all that and got back with everyone not realizing he was gone? It's kind of unrealistic, you know, but it's the climax and it's him, you know, using his powers and his wits to save the day. And of course they score the touchdown and of course they win the championship. And then all these guys who we never heard of before and never will since are so excited and, you know, like, oh, we won. Woo. And you're like, and I would feel a lot happier if I knew more than just two people who were associated with this team.
Then you also do get that a little bit of a callback when he does come back to his original position, and like in the early in the episode, he says he has to think about like making sure he falls, and again when he gets back to his position, the guy tackles him, and he does have to make sure he falls. So you see that like that is something he has to do.
I did like that was a good bit to kind of show what he had just told Jonathan. Although I don't really understand the physics of like is he like literally like pushing himself back? I mean like because he's. He's Superman, you know?
Yeah, that guy should be like running into a brick wall.
Did he practice like with his dad? Okay, dad, come tackle me. You know, like he must have perfected this somehow. So anyway, but to your point, I'm glad they showed off what he had just told Jonathan about. Like he did get tackled and those kinds of things. So then we cut to, you know, the Kent farm later that night. Apparently Clark come back after curfew because they were partying since they won the championship, right? But his parents are proud of him. Jonathan does mention that, you know, back when he was playing, the only thing he had to worry about was getting sacked or throwing the next pass. Although we had established that that's a continuity problem because back in Hothead, and again, forgive me, I still haven't looked it up, but he did not play quarterback. I think he played halfback or something. The coach, Coach Walt from that episode mentions to Jonathan because he was his coach. But then they retcon that Jonathan played a quarterback in high school because Clark played quarterback. And, you know, quarterback's apparently the only position that matters on football team, which is inaccurate, but that's how people act about it these days. But anyway, I had to throw that out there.
That's how you convey importance to people like me who have no idea about the game.
You're like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Yeah, why not?
It's all football, right? So they exit, they go upstairs, whatever, and then Chloe enters, you know, as happens on this show. We have one character in one set, characters leave, and then another character enters, right?
And I'm pretty sure Jonathan was carrying, like, a pot of tea on the tray that he was carrying. I'm like, okay, sure.
Just went upstairs for some hot tea, I guess.
Yeah, why not?
But Chloe does have a good, it's a very Chloe line. She's like, I don't know how many times I put you in the penalty box, you find your way out, right? And she kind of, she's really starting to get suspicious of Clark here, because she's like, it's crazy what happened that, I mean, obviously they mentioned that Mikhail was arrested, right? But she's like, I don't know how that happened. And Clark's like, I don't know. And she's like, well, I guess we all have our weaknesses, except for you, of course. So I was like, uh-oh, Chloe's going to find out Clark's secret this season because she's a smart reporter, not because someone just happens to show him using his powers. I hope it doesn't something lame like that, but that's the discussion for another episode. Moving on.
Yeah, it's a tremendous leap of logic that she wouldn't figure this out at this point, because like so much, like she's like only one person knew about the situation.
You're right. Yes, that's a great point. No one else knew. She does mention that her jammer, as I said, it had a good explanation. It came from Uncle Sam, but literally her Uncle Sam, Uncle Sam Lane, not just the United States.
Yeah, exactly. So. Well, the Uncle Sam from the Freedom Fighters.
We cut to school the next day. Clark's all excited because he goes, "Hey, Lana, I'm looking for Jason. I left him 3 messages. She's like, "Yeah, I know." And he's like, "Well, hey, I got the scholarship to bet you. I just wanted to thank him because he's going to put in a good word." She's like, "Jason got fired today. Hope you're happy." And she leaves. I'm like, God, the show is not doing Lana any favors with how, like, how much of a B she is in these situations, huh?
Yeah, she's definitely got, like the, she's definitely got the attitude down. And it's not, it doesn't, like, makes you think that they don't want you to like her. It was like, but, like, she doesn't understand what the situation is, but, like, she doesn't have to act that bad.
Exactly. Like, it's again, it's weird. This is your second build character on the show, the female lean, and yeah, like they're not doing her any favors. She has 2 scenes in this episode. One is talking to Jason, right, about Clark and how, like, I hope he doesn't tell anyone about us, right? And then this one's like, she's pissed at Clark because she thinks he got Jason fired after all he did, right? And I can understand why she would be mad, but we understand the situation more than her, like you said. And so it's just, she just says, like, 2-3 passive-aggressive lines to him and then walks off. And you're like, what the hell, right?
This is like the opposite of passing the Bechdel test.
Yes, it's
like, right? A woman talking to 2 men about 2 other men.
Bechdel test opposite, very good. I think I might have skipped it. I got it out of order, excuse me. But we see Lex with Mrs. Pitalik, and they're at Luther Corp, and he got him out of jail. And he says, "Don't worry, you're going to have a lot of company," right? She's like, "What? Where is he taking him, right?" And then Lex, his little thumbprint on the secret Luther Corp elevator, and takes him to what? Level 33.1, what's up?
You could be a level 33.1 Patreon.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So yes, if anybody out there wants to be a member of level 33.1, you will not have a lot of company right now, but hopefully down the road.
Well, the company that's there is very good.
I like what Mrs. Pitalik tells him here. He's like, "I don't think you understand, Mr. Luther. I've lost my gift. I lost my ability." Lex tells him, "Anything can be lost can be found again." All right. And this is actually something they call back to way down in season 7. And one of actually my favorite episodes, Fracture, right? Where Clark tells Lex that, because when he's like talking to, you know, little Lex in his head and all that stuff. So I like that they just took this little bit of dialogue and brought it back for Lex in the future. And it's a nice sentiment, you know. Although Lex is being very evil and nefarious here, because he's like, "Oh, you're going to like it here, right?" And then, you know, we don't see 33.1 for like 2 more years. But when we do, it's a pretty terrible place.
And like, what is the implication here is like that he's like recruited him for some kind of experience. But we never see Mikhail again.
No, I think it might have been because the reaction to this episode was so negative, they never brought him back. Again, like, I thought he was perfect for a Smallville version of Mr. Mixus Pitalik. And I don't need to see a fifth dimension imp, right? Some foreign exchange student with, you know, some magic powers is cool with me. But, you know, it's kind of cheesy how they, like, open the elevator. It's like all this light, right?
It feels like something you see in the X-Files, actually.
Yeah, exactly, right? Of course, they don't show us, right? Because in theory, like, oh, there's going to be all these freaks of the weeks he's been collecting, right? That's all who's in here. That's the implication. But you're right, it's so vague. And like just spitting light, you're like, well, what is this? So I mean, it's cool at the time, but they don't revisit it for a couple more years. And I don't see that as them playing a long game as much as like setting stuff up they really didn't know that they were gonna pick up on. You know,
it definitely seems like something like when I watched it live, I probably would have been going crazy over it, because like it's one of those reveals you got in the early seasons of Smallville. They would literally give you nothing, and you would be going crazy for the next week, like to see where it would be heading. And then, looking back at it, I'm just like, I know this isn't really going anywhere at the moment, and so as I said, it's just so vague. But it's something like when I look back, like I would have thought this was the coolest thing when I first watched it.
Oh, we all did. We're like, oh my god, what's gonna happen? Oh, I have to wait 2 years. Okay, because in the companion, Brian Peterson, you know, writer and eventually executive producer of the show, had this to say about the last scene with Mrs. Pitalik here. "That's an example of a storyline that has not paid off until season 6, really. But I think it's given the show a lot of levels that we plant things, knowing that we're not just going to let them drop, which is why I think people keep watching. We absolutely knew that we were bringing it back." So, sure, Brian. Whatever you
okay,
say.
Okay, a likely story.
I did get those scenes mixed up, because we had this one, then Clark and Lana at school, And then Clark goes to see Lex again. I really, really, really like this scene between Clark and Lex, because it's like their, you know, their antagonistic relationship is kind of ratcheted up, because he shows up and Lex is like, who am I today? Like the bad friend and all this stuff. So I like how like aggressive Clark is being with Lex here, because he got Jason fired. He's like, I don't know if I made this clear, but when we talk about stuff, it needs to be kept between us. And like, that's like a real life friendship discussion, right?
Yeah, it's definitely like one of those things, just like, you've taken something that I've said to you in confidence and you just like, you've abused it. And it's like, it's another example of like, just like going out of his way, thinking he's doing something right, but like kind of like undertone by him, just like, obviously like to anybody else, it would be something that's completely wrong. But like in Lex's twisted mind, it's just like, oh, I'm doing this to help my friend.
Well, he's like, it's a, you know, teacher-student liaisons are highly inappropriate, right? He has this facade of like being the altruistic, doing the right thing. But Clark calls him out on it. He's like, you know, a year ago I would have believed you did this out of some twisted loyalty to me, but that's not why you did it. Why did you do this? And then we cut to Lex. He just kind of turns around, and so he's got the fire poker the whole scene too, which I love. Right? It's a great prop. Rosenbaum uses it very well. But then we kind of just end on Lex like smiling, right? And you're like, oh, okay, so. To me, like, I don't know what he told Clark there, right? But, you know, to me as a viewer, I'm like, oh, they're setting up the Lexana thing, right? He wants her to break up with Jason so, like, he can get with her, right? I mean, that's basically what they're setting up here for this season.
Yeah, okay. Now, I didn't even think about that, but now that you've made me think about that, I'm just like, oh, that's even more disturbing.
Well, no, totally. I mean, like, the episode, it goes out of its way to Clark's like, you didn't do this for me. Why did you do it? You know, and I think that's the implication here, unfortunately, because I disagree with it, but unfortunately, I think that's what they're going for.
And then, like, you just think about, like, the relationship between Lex and Lana, like on top of the fact that it's Lex and Lana, is like, it's not a great, that's not a great relationship either, because he's probably the same age as Jason.
Yeah, I think he's a little older than Jason. Yeah, exactly.
So I was like, it's not much better, and it's just like, oh, it's so seedy, now that you've, like, planted that in my mind.
But Lex is right. You know what I mean? Like, this was an inappropriate relationship, and he should be fired. The show never should have never asked us to root for this in the first place. And here we are. So Lex Luthor saving the day.
Yeah, like, and you're framing Clark as the bad guy in this, and then now you're also, like, paying Lex's, like, saving it, and it's just like, you know where it's going to go. It's just like, this is all kinds of wrong.
Anyway, there you go. That's the end of the episode. But as we mentioned, there is a deleted scene. I'm not sure exactly where it would have taken place. Somewhere near the middle of the episode. It's a scene between Clark and Lana, which, yeah, shocking. They used to have scenes together on this show. They're talking on his porch. Credit for that not being his loft, for one. And she's there, like, talking about, like, oh, hey, I just want to let you know that Jason put in a good word for you with the Met. It kind of ties in their last scene, right? Put in a good word with you for the Met you scout and all that stuff. And he's like, okay, thanks. And she questions if he is using steroids. He's like, you know, the Lana I know would have never questioned that. She's like, well, the Lana you know is questioning a lot of things. Like, she and but it is good, kind of like showing you like the status of their relationship right now, right?
And if you go back like this, like if you go back and watch the deleted scene, like it actually sets up the scene with Clark and Lana at the end of the episode much better than the one we get.
Right. No, absolutely. Right. And so, like we were saying, they should have dropped the one with her and Jason, which was nothing. As you said, this scene conveys all that information, but better between like your two main characters. Even though this is a better scene, at the end, she's like, so you're not going to tell anyone about me and Jason, right? Please don't tell anyone that. And he's like, oh, so that's why you're here? And he's like, that's why you come to all the football games. It's not about me or the school. It's for Jason, right? I'm like, thank you. I'm glad that was like an on screen revelation for him, right?
Yeah, just like Clark realizing that like this is not really like it's all about like a relationship between Lana and Jason. I'm kind of being a little bit petty about it, but also as you said, like knowing that this is like underlying the fact that this is a pretty inappropriate relationship on the whole.
Absolutely. So yeah, how about Clark's side here? So that's your deleted scene. Again, I don't know what else they could have cut other than that Jason and Lana scene. But they should have found a way. And I find that a lot in season four. Like, there's a lot of great scenes they leave on the cutting room floor. Like, I'm glad we got to see them, but it kind of makes me sad that, like, they didn't find a way to incorporate them in the episode. I know they only have, like, 42 minutes, but you got to cut something somewhere, shave it down to fit this stuff in. So,
yeah, it is a shame because, like, this was a pretty good scene. And as I said, it like does set up the episode's ending, like, much better than the one we get.
I think you'll find your new accommodations a lot more comfortable than the county lockup.
And where are you taking me?
Don't worry. You're gonna have a lot of company.
I'm not worried. I have the feeling I can learn a lot from you, but I'm just sorry we can't make good in our agreement.
You underestimate the value of my winnings.
I told you, Mr. Luther. I've lost my talent.
Mikhail, if it's one thing I've learned, it's that anything lost can be found again.
If you knew I had a special talent, then why did you bet against me?
I didn't. I bet on Clark Kent.
Jinx got an 8.3 out of 10 on IMDb. And Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage, not a fan of this one, gave it a 1 out of 5. So a very low score from Neil. I will read his... He does something after his big review called a super short review. And since this is the lowest score, he might have given another episode a 1. Honestly, I can't recall off the top of my head. But since this is the lowest score he's ever given, I do want to read his, quote, super short review. It's like just a paragraph. He says, quote, "A man calling himself Mrs. Pitalik, pronounced wrong, comes on the show, sexually harasses Chloe and attempts to kill her, and has his magical powers refuted with a technological leap of logic. Lana is found out, no, I never thought it could happen, and handles it in usual fashion. Lex is a good guy, Clark is a bad guy, and the loner who I identified with is now a popular football player to the tune of a song geared to loners I identify with. To put it mildly, I am angered and confused, and not just by subliminal devices by which we elect our proverbial Lanas. 1 of 5. So there you go. That's his review in summary. I see his points. I do. I think he goes a little extreme. I think being a Superman fan, first and foremost, from the comic books, I think he's really jaded on the fact that this is not the Mrs. Pitalik that he expected. He has some valid points about some other things, especially the reversal where, like, Lex is somehow the bad guy for getting this inappropriate relationship ended between Lana and Jason, or at least, you know, his Jason's job. But yeah, I mean, 1 out of 5, kind of harsh, but I ask you, Jazz, what's your rating on the letter grade scale for Jinx?
As I said, I wasn't really looking forward to reviewing this one, just because, like, the episode was kind of not the greatest when I first watched it. But just talking through it with you, it kind of upped my opinion on just like how they did the best they could with the characterization that they were doing with Mrs. Pitalik. So there were some good scenes with Clark and Lex and Clark and Jonathan. So I'd probably give it a C+. Is probably the best I could do.
All right, C+ for you. I'm actually going to give this one a B-. I enjoyed it much more than I had remembered, you know? And again, I find myself appreciating the translation of some absurd comic book character like Mrs. Pitalik to the Smallville universe. I mean, this is fine, you know? And the football stuff, this is like the one episode with the football that I feel like they approached it like correctly, you know, and they address a lot of the issues that Clark would encounter and tie it in with the games. And I thought, you know, I thought Mrs. Pitalik was a pretty well rounded, fleshed out character. I understood his motivations and like what he was going for. And I mean, it was, I don't know why he didn't immediately start helping Lex to stay in the country. Like, I can help you get $1 billion or something. I don't know. With his power, it did seem kind of stupid that he'd be wasting it on silly things like this. But he's a goofy teenager, right? He's just living life. He's having fun with his games, and he's all about that. And I don't know. So I'm going to give it a B-. So C+ for you, B- for me.
Yeah, as you said, like, it's the characterization of Mrs. Pitalik, like, on the whole, is wildly, like inaccurate to the comics, but For the kind of character they needed for this episode, they did fine, as you said. It's a good for what it was supposed to be.
Now moving on to the tally board, short tally board for this episode. We have a +1 for hospital visits because the defensive player for the other team that Clark injures, we see him in the hospital, so that's a +1, and so that's 51 so far. And then we have a +1 for product placement, Pete. Even though Pete didn't make it in this episode, the product placement did. Old Spice Red Zone is everywhere in this episode. It's in the locker rooms, on the scoreboards, in the stands. So that's a +1 for product placement, Pete, which brings us to 6.
And a proud sponsor of Always Hold On to Smallville.
That's right. That's the Old Spice theme, right? So Bechdel test, fail, unfortunately. As you said, Jazz, it's kind of a reverse Bechdel test on this episode, unfortunately. So, Jazz, a lot of fun talking to you about Jinx this week on Always Hold On to Smallville. If people want to find you out there on the internet, where can they find you?
Most of my social media stuff is just on Twitter. Like, I'll be tweeting about, like, basketball games or occasionally, like, getting into some conversation about Smallville. Like, I do, like, those are the two main things I like to talk about. So, I do want to talk to me for some reason. My podcast is pretty defunct at this point. And I have very low expectations that it'll be coming back. But if you want to, like, have a chat about Smallville, I'm on Twitter at HeadbandBrother. I'll probably find most of you if you interact with Zach on Twitter as well. So yeah, that's how you can find me.
And a proud member of our Patreon, I'm happy to say, Jazz.
Yes, you should join the Patreon page. You get awesome things like early episodes and extra commentaries. It's been very enjoyable and definitely worth the money.
I appreciate that, man. That was completely unsolicited. I just wanted to throw that out there. So I appreciate that. Thank you, Jazz. I'm glad you guys are enjoying it.
No worries.
I've enjoyed it too. All right, well, that's going to do it for us this week on Always Hold on to Smallville. But tune in next time when we talk about Spell. But until then, always hold on to Smallville.
I walk this empty street on the boulevard of broken dreams, where the city sleeps and I'm the only one.